All early-ish really is an unschooled approach, technically. It's learning through play, and really, when you think about it, we can do that right the way up till they leave school.
Hi, and welcome to Home Education for All, or HEFA for short. At HEFA, we believe that community is the heart of home education, and so that's what we built. We built a community in the UK, helping, supporting, and uplifting each other to be the best home educators we can be. And now we're coming to you via this podcast too. Stay tuned for all things home education in the UK via our amazing, experienced, knowledgeable, and often hilarious team. We truly believe home education can be for everyone, and we hope listening here will give you the confidence or knowledge you need if you've been considering home education. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to the HEFA podcast. So this week on the podcast, we are covering one of our other guides in the big old guides section of the HEFA Facebook group, and that is early years. And I have one of our wonderful guests with me, Claire, who is has an utter passion for early years, don't you, Claire?
Absolutely love it.
Absolutely love it. So, Claire, how many kids have you got?
Three.
Three kids. Fantastic. And how old are they?
2, 7, and 8.
Awesome. Have they always been home ed?
No. So, obviously, the one that's 2 years old, she's never been to a setting. My 7 and 8 year old, they were at a setting. They were at a school before lockdown. So, my eldest one did about a year, and then pandemic hit. And then my middle one did about 6 months or something. So if you imagine, they were at school for a year or 6 months, just playing in reception class, foundation class, just like with Play-Doh and, you know, that kind of thing, having fun. And then they were at home with me for best part of a year, having fun. And then they went back to school, and it was such a change for them because there was no transition at all. They'd gone from having fun and playing to sitting down and writing for 4 or 5 hours a day, and they just could not understand it, really, more than anything. And it really upset me to hear them say that their hands ached, you know, honestly, like crazy stuff, like they had to put their feet, like they couldn't tuck their foot underneath their, you know, when they sit, they couldn't sit on their foot and they had to sit up straight. And I thought, oh my gosh, like I think they've just lounged around on a sofa upside down for about 18 months. How on earth are my children? So, and they didn't manage it and it wasn't good for them. So then that's when I pulled them out.
Excellent. And you've home ed ever since?
Yeah.
Amazing. So when we're talking about early years, I always think of early years as being up to kind of reception class.
Yeah, it's class birth to 5, I think, technically.
Yeah. And that's all centred around what kind of learning?
Free play. Unschooling, free play, just like learning through play. The best thing for any child. The thing I disagree with is that the fact we're told it stops at 5.
Yeah. And
if you put any learning, I don't know, kind of like resources in front of a child, I could put something out for my 2-year-old, buttons and Play-Doh and sequins and spoons and measuring things, and my 8-year-old will be like, hey mum, what are you doing? Like, can I come and do that? She's not told to do it. She just wants to come and do it. So we really need to, in my opinion, stop the idea that all of a sudden at 5, they should be sat learning in a different way, because why would that be necessary?
And I would extend that all the way up to the end of compulsory school age, personally.
Yeah, 100%, exactly. There's no, I mean, we need to change, you know, it's no good asking a 14-year-old perhaps to count how many
ladybird
has, but we can definitely change it. And the whole point of Play-Doh or anything that, you know, helps children with their hands, it's constantly keeping them busy. Like, some children learn much better fiddling with things. So why are we not encouraging it? We're asking them to sit on their hands, you know, put their hands together and listen. Let them do stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. As someone who is, my household is fully neurodivergent, I had such a struggle with school teachers trying to get them to understand that if you force my child to sit still and look at you, their brain cannot take in the information. If you are, you know, quite happy for them to stare out the window, fiddle with something, you know, focus on something in their lap, they can hear everything that you say. And it was so difficult for them to grasp it. And I remember a lot of teachers saying, yeah, I can understand how that works, but it's distracting for other children. And if I let them, you know, fiddle and things, I have to let everyone fiddle and things. And then, you know, I don't know who's listening and who's not.
Yeah.
And I was like, I remember thinking to myself then, I didn't know about home ed then, but I remember thinking to myself then that, hang on a minute, you're supposed to be providing an individual education for my child. But actually, yeah, you can't do that, can you? Because there's 30 of them.
Yeah, so we move from this shift of how, imagine when the children are really small. So like, for example, when mine were really small and they were just learning to walk, and we're just so enthusiastic, aren't we? Encouraging. They fall down 100 times trying to walk. And every single time we're like, oh my gosh, like, that's wonderful. Walk to mommy. Come on, come have it. You know, we're so encouraging, aren't we?
Yeah.
And then they get to like 5 and 6 and the encouragement just halts, just stops. And we become, right, you need to sit and learn this, you need to sit and learn that. Oh, right, okay, well, actually, you've been learning them spellings for 3 weeks now. You really ought to know them. Where is it? We've gone from saying to small people, like, do you know what? They'll get there when they're ready. Oh, don't you worry that your child didn't walk till they were so many months, or mine spoke at this month, so I was doing Sudoku when they were 3, or whatever people say. We've gone from just being like, they'll get there when they're ready, to all of a sudden, oh, your child's 6, right? So do they know all the, you know, common words now? Like, no, they don't. Why would they? Because they've actually learned to ride a bike this last 6 weeks, and they could only focus on their gross motor skills for these 6 weeks. So no, they don't know how to ride. Big elephants can't always use small whatevers, you know?
I do know. So my youngest is 9, and he has never been to school, and has always been unschooled. So he's completely self-directed in his learning. His intrinsic motivation is just insane. Like, yeah, if he wants to do something, he wants to do it because he wants to do it, not because he thinks that he should do it, or, you know, that he's going to get rewarded in some way for it. You know, learning the thing is his reward. And I remember he's probably the biggest experiment that we've had, because obviously he's never been to school, whereas the other three had. So we were really interested to see what would happen with reading and things like that. And, you know, it's really hard not to compare your children to schooled children, and not to compare them to your older children as well.
Yeah.
And I had to keep reminding myself, well, hang on a minute. When my now 14-year-old came out of school, he couldn't read. You know, he needed lots of, you know, phonics interventions and all kinds of stuff at 6. And he couldn't read. And within a year, he had found a reason for needing to read and taught himself.
Yeah.
And I thought, OK, I need to just let this happen, however it's going to happen. And it did happen. You know, I think the first time I realised that he was actually reading things, we were sat in the cinema, and we were watching a Star Wars film or something like that, and it came across the thing saying Lucasfilm. And my youngest suddenly shouts out, that's the same as Lucas's name.
Oh, wow. So you didn't even... they could.
Yeah. And we were like,
hang on a minute, what?
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah.
Children learn. They do everything on their own. You think about what they learn before they hit school age. They learn to walk, talk, do all these things. And there is no teacher beside them apart from us. So we're their teacher. So we teach them because they just copy what we do and they want to do everything we do. Like I always try and promote at work and at home, just let them be really confident in themselves. Just let them do, you know, what we see as chores, they see as fun. Like my little one always like, Mummy, let me help you take the washing out. And you're thinking, gosh, this would just take 30 seconds if I were to do it, but come on, let's spend 10 minutes. Do you know, and we've actually got to just embrace that because it doesn't last long. And it really does help them realise that actually there's so much to learn and they just find fun in everything. Just let them find the fun and then we can just help them.
Yes, yes. And I'll be honest, you know, my 9-year-old hasn't lost that fun yet. Nope. He still finds everything fascinating and exciting, and except maybe the chores.
yeah, I think that probably gets lost about 5 or 6.
Yeah. But, you know, he does still have a complete awe and wonder that, you know, the others lost very early in comparison. And it's, I sometimes think to myself, is home ed keeping him younger? And then I realised that no, it's just actually allowing him to be a child.
Yeah, just letting, and remember, they're at a different height to us. I think a lot of people forget as well. They recognise things that we wouldn't because we're so much taller than them. And yeah, they can hear things that are actually closer to the ground. They can see things, they can smell different things that, you know, because we're higher up and stuff. And we could learn a lot by just listening to them, just taking time to listen to them and learning about stuff. And their imagination is incredible. My little girl, she has a pet egg. That's the new thing. So she has an egg that she takes care of. I'm gonna have to swap it soon. I think it'll probably go a bit yuck soon, but she creates a little bed for it and she takes this egg places, and she's really gentle with it, and it's not cracked yet, so she's doing really well with it. But one minute that will be her baby egg, and then it'll be currency, you know, and then she'll be buying something with it, and then 2 minutes later it'll be a bowling ball. Or like, their imagination's wonderful. You don't need to buy them a till with pretend money in. Just give them a box and some twigs or acorns they found on the ground and they'll make their own fun.
Yeah, they will. My 9-year-old still, although he does use money now, he gets a bit of board and he puts it across 2 chairs and he gathers things up that he wants to sell in his shop. And he uses real money now. This is all self-directed. None of it is us saying, okay, let's practice money and currency and things like that. He's like, I want to play shops. So we just build it in, you know. Right, well, how much is that? Oh, that's £4.99. Okay, well, I've given you £15. How much change? You know, I've given you £20. How much change? It's those kinds of things that allows him to stay in that very early years kind of approach to learning, where it's just play and it's fun and it's exploring, but sort of moving it upwards with his age, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. All early years really is an unschooled approach. Technically, it's learning through play, and really when you think about it, we can do that right the way up till they leave school. Like you said, there's no need for us to sit them. If children like to do workbooks and stuff, then absolutely do that. But to think that we all need to do that, it's not necessary at all. You know, water play, everything is so good for children. Just being outside, just making mess, kind of expressing themselves, art, music. They don't even have music in classrooms, I don't think, anymore. I don't think, from what I've heard, you know. We've always got some sort of music in this house, whether it's the children making music or they, you know, they put Alexa on and listening to music or they're dancing around. And we should have more of that. We should have noise. Children need noise. Children are noisy.
They're supposed to be.
We're making them sit down too young, I think. They need to just be playing.
I agree. So when it comes to sort of people who deregister and or they choose home ed as their first choice. We quite often get in group people panicking a little bit, sort of they've got a 5-6 year old or a 7 year old or even a 4 year old, and they're kind of like, what do I need to be doing? And we will often say, you know, playing. That's kind of it. But I wonder whether we could provide a little bit more structure to what we mean by playing.
Yeah, so I mean, if you wanted to, you could split it into gross motor skills, fine motor skills, you know, mark making. You could kind of, you know, put it into different categories. That would be handy because it's really good for children to learn to pedal. Pedaling on a bike, the gross motor skills involved in that is so difficult for a child to do. I don't think people realise when children achieve these milestones, they're like, oh yeah, they've been pedaling a bike for so long. Do you know how incredible that is? Do you know how much effort that takes for them to do? We really need to celebrate it more. We need to maybe realise that you don't need to just think it's just play. It's not just play. It's so good for them all. And maybe the fine motor skills, the mark making, could be anything. It could be a stick in the mud. They don't even have to be writing anything, you know, their name or anything like that. Just making marks, you know, using a paintbrush with water on the fence. Mine have always liked doing that, just drawing shapes and stuff and helping them draw shapes, recognising colours. That can just be, you could be walking down the street, and mine always used to like looking for door numbers, you know, down the street, and I'd be like, oh, who can find me number 17? Where's the house number 17? And they don't even realise they're learning, and you're just walking down the street.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think it's so important to keep that kind of play-based learning going as long as humanly possible. And I know for me, you know, I know a lot of people worry about the sort of what the local authority will feel and all of those kinds of things. But actually, what we're looking to do is to provide an education that's suitable to our child, right? And yeah. If the way that your child is most likely to learn most is through a play environment, then that's you providing a suitable education.
Yeah. Exactly. And just because children work well in school doesn't mean they're thriving. Yeah. My little girl, she did really good at school, you could say, like, you know, always passing what she needed to pass, meeting all the grades she needed to meet or whatever. But she has this urgency even now to just rush. Everything is just a big rush. And she gets so frustrated if she doesn't finish it so quickly. And gosh, take an hour, 3 hours drawing that picture. You know, we're doing like Mardi Gras masks. And it was like as fast as she can, finishing it. Because everything's such a rush. I just wish we could all just slow down a little bit and let children just take their time.
Yeah, I agree. My when I took one of mine out when they were 7, one of the reasons that we removed her from school was that she absolutely fell in love with this art project they were doing on it wasn't Van Gogh, I can't remember who it was, but they were doing this art project on this particular artist, and she was so excited and she really got into it, and they were doing it for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then she came in really excited to carry on, and they said, no, we've done everything we need to do for that artist now, so we're moving on to the next artist. And she was like, okay, but I'm really enjoying this, like, you know. And she came home really upset about it. She had asked, you know, well, can you give me some extra work then, because I really want to do some more, and I was really looking forward to making my own one of this and all of that kind of thing. And the teacher was like, well, I can give it to you to do at home if you want, but you know, you don't need to do it. And it was just the most fascinating conversation that I ended up having with the school, because, you know, essentially they ticked the boxes on the curriculum that they needed to.
Yeah.
So the interest of the child didn't matter.
Yeah, and that's what I would probably say to people where early years are concerned. It doesn't matter if they've spent years and years on a subject. My little boy, who's nearly 8 years old, has studied dinosaurs for as long as I can remember, and there's no stopping him. Like, he is obsessed with dinosaurs. It's just his thing. And he knows all the names, he can read all the names, all self-taught, because I actually can't read the names, so that's how self-taught it is. And he corrects me, and all he wants to do is that. So if you've got a child who you think, gosh, all they want to do is just sit and colour all day, good. Just give them things for them to colour that would help them. You know, I don't know, you could do them. Mine like to do, they're like little sums, and then they create a Minecraft person or something. Yeah. You different colours. Do you know, it's like colour by numbers, and you've got to work out what the number is. Just, you can find stuff like that all over the internet for free. And if that is what you like to do, you can find stuff. You just type it in, literally type in, you know, colouring Minecraft maths worksheet. Something will come up and you'll think, actually, that's really handy.
Yeah. You know, and working things in, like, if we use the example of someone, a child who really loves doing colouring, you mentioned Mardi Gras masks earlier. You know, learning about Mardi Gras and all of that kind of thing alongside making and colouring in those masks. And you can do that for all kinds of different celebrations and all of those kinds of things. Because it's not necessarily about the thing they're colouring in. It's about everything that they're exploring while they're doing that.
That's exactly right. Like, we try to do a lot of topic stuff just because I find it easier, because I've got three ages and three, you know, it's just a lot easier for me. So I Googled at the beginning of the year, which actually seems so long ago, it wasn't, was it? All the festivals around the world. And we try and make something, make a decoration, cook something, learn a few phrases in the language, write them, and learn a few facts about it. And it's absolutely incredible. My little girl, we did Chinese New Year, and we made fortune cookies. We wrote our own fortunes, we made fortune cookies, and we made these little red envelopes that the children, I think, get in China for Chinese New Year, and we put a little bit of money in it, and we made a Chinese meal for them and stuff. But now she's on Duolingo learning Chinese, or Mandarin, I'm not too sure which one she's learning, but she's always just on there coming out with little phrases. So all of it adds to it. Children will love to do it. I don't have the patience to sit and learn Chinese. I just don't want to do it. But she doesn't. What a wonderful world we live in now, where everything is so at our fingertips to be able to do.
And hands-on.
Yeah.
You know? It's not a teacher sat in front of you getting you to repeat back and forward or write it down. You know, it's all self-directed, and it's, you pick up the app when you want to learn it, and you know there's instant feedback. I use Duolingo for learning Gaelic, so funnily enough, this same method that you're talking about does work with children a lot older as well. My 14-year-old, he plays on Minecraft an awful lot, and he is on a server called Rulercraft, and it's where they as a server, they create these different countries and lands and all kinds of different things. And then those lands are governed by people in the server, and you deal with all kinds of things like the economy and budgeting and dealing with difficulties between two warring cities and all kinds of stuff. And he, alongside this, he has an absolute love of Russia as a country and culture, and he's got quite a communist socialist mind, and he noticed that this stuff going on in Rulercraft was really quite similar. He saw the similarities between that and Russia Ukraine, and was like, right, I want to do more on this. And he's now doing a Russia project. So most recently, he's been learning all about the currency, and the way that money works in Russia. I think it was yesterday, we were researching all about sort of how much people earn in Russia Which numerically sounds like a huge amount of money. It's like 57,000 rubles a month, right? And yeah. that sounds like such a huge amount of money when you think of it in British pounds. But he then did the exchange rate and realised it was about £500 a month. And he was like, okay, well, that's not enough to even pay a mortgage here. So then he was looking at how much a mortgage is and how much the food and utilities and things like that are, so that he could get a better understanding of how far that £500 goes for people in Russia.
And how incredible that he wanted to do that himself. He didn't say, right, you need to sit down and research this. He just went and did it.
I facilitate him, so he showed an interest. He was talking to me more and more about Russia. I printed off, I wrote one evening, I wrote down lots of different questions that I'd thought of about Russia. And I was like, oh, we were sat at dinner and I said, oh, I printed off those questions about Russia. And he was like, yeah, I can't wait. This is so cool. So we just kind of dived into it yesterday and I think the day before. And he might not pick that up again for a couple of weeks because he's solved the problem he was trying to understand in the game he was playing. So then it might come to, quite often they'll have an argument or something like that, and it will be, it will be capitalism versus communism kind of social views on things. And it happens a lot because there's many different people from all over the world in Rulercraft. So you've got lots of different views and opinions and sort of party lines and all of that kind of stuff. So when that comes up, he'll probably go, right, this is something I don't get. Like, and we'll have a conversation about it. And that will then drive him to want to explore more about that. That playing is the catalyst for him then building out from there, expanding out from there, and then he'll go back in and he'll play some more, and he's 14.
Exactly. So it doesn't even matter what age, it's right the way up. I mean, I said about my little boy who loves dinosaurs, so we went to the course near us and he was looking for fossils, and we were really lucky that on that day there was an elderly couple there who'd been like fossil hunting for 50 years. So it was a real treat because they were dying to show him everything they knew, and he picked up something that he thought looked like a little bullet and they were like, oh no, that's a fossilised squid. And he learnt loads. But while we were there, they were talking to him about the different types of rock and where you might find fossils. And then when we got home, he did like loads of learning on sedimentary rock, where you'd find different types of rocks. Then we went on to volcanoes and how the heat can change rocks. And afterwards, I thought, we've probably just covered like the whole of Key Stage 2, science on rocks, all because we went fossil hunting.
If he needs a good place to go fossil hunting, he needs to come down south.
Oh, I know. Is that the Jurassic Coast down there? I've heard all about it. Gosh, I'm planning. Did you hear I was planning a trip to London? We've got to come see this new dinosaur that's going to be in the National History Museum in April. So we're heading there. We might have to divert somewhere.
We're only another hour or so.
Come around for a cuppa.
So what would you say is your biggest piece of advice for play? I wouldn't necessarily say early years, but for those kids that are in the early years, what's your best advice? And for people looking towards that play-based kind of learning theme, would there be different advice?
I think the best advice I could give is just encourage, just continue that, like you do when they're 2 and 3 and they're doing the things for the first time, because even though they're 7, they're still doing things for the first time. I'd really just keep encouraging them, just to give them the confidence. I think that's the main thing for early years, really, confidence. And the play-based stuff, there's some really amazing articles out there about learning through play, and I would just advise you just to read it, because I hate using the word indoctrinated, but we're told we have to learn a certain way.
We're conditioned.
Yes, that's the better word. And we don't need to. And don't just take my word for it. Just go and look. They don't need to sit at a table to learn. My advice would be just to look at everything. There's so much out there. Twinkle's really good. I know a lot of people think it's all worksheet based, but the topic stuff on there is really, really good for a bit of everything. You know, you don't have to do the worksheet stuff. We got all our Mardi Gras stuff from there, and there was tons.
Yeah, and that is something about Twinkle, right? I recently nearly re-thingied my subscription. I did hold off, but the reason for that, and that probably sounds really weird coming from an unschooler, right? Well, why would you use Twinkle? It's all worksheets. No.
Yeah.
Someone else has gone to the trouble to do all of this work on researching all of this stuff that my kid is interested in, and I don't have the time to do all of that. So of course I'm going to go to Twinkle and I'm going to find everything about unfortunately, they didn't have anything on terrorist attacks in the UK for my 9-year-old, funnily enough. But, you know, I asked him what area of history he wanted to study. He said terrorist attacks in the UK. So we did. But, you know, dinosaurs or, you know, a particular culture or a particular area such as geology and geography and the rainforests. We did a fantastic study on the ISS, the International Space Station.
Yeah.
And all of that came from the ideas from Twinkle. So I downloaded it all. My kids never saw any of it.
No, you just cherry pick what you want. So yeah. Just type in the search bar the keyword you know you're researching or you're wanting, and then just cherry pick the things that you like, and there's pretty much something for everyone on there, I think.
I agree. My only complaint is that it doesn't go up old enough with fun stuff. Yeah. But, you know, we've got a long way to go before we start to recognise that older children need just as much play. It just looks very different.
Yeah, at work, I have children all the way up to 11. And they will still want to, desperate to play with, you know, the beans on spoons and the pulses and stuff and making potions. And they love it. And I think it's actually a release for them from the learning they've been doing. It's something they're just calm. But then it's kind of our job to ask them questions. You know, maybe they can't see the learning in it or something, and they just think it's just beans. Well, ask them, where do you think them beans come from? Oh, is there fair trade on the wrapper? Let's just talk about stuff. Have a conversation, because one little thing from you could just ignite their learning.
Completely. Completely. And speaking of fair trade, there's a fair trade week coming up. Yes. I can't remember where I saw it, but I think it's next week. Anyway, thank you so much for sharing your passion.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope I didn't waffle on.
You did not waffle on. You were very succinct and full of really, really wise stuff for parents to think about. My one piece of advice for those parents with younger, sort of under 10, I would say, is spend a little bit of time on your knees, my friends. See the world through your children's eyes, because you know, there is a completely different experience to be had when you're down at your kid's level.
Just imagine every day there being something incredible. You know, if we go to another country and we see, the Eiffel Tower for the first time, we're like, wow, look at that. Imagine being that every single day they see something, you know, to them. A double-decker bus, like my little boy, a double-decker bus has always been known as a transformer bus. I've no idea why. We used to have to take a weekly trip on the transformer bus because he thought it was a transformer. Like, just listen to them. They're, honestly, it's something to be just cherished. We just need to just nurture it and take care of their early years. And it's too short a time. We just need to love every minute of it, really.
We do. While also appreciating that it's hard work, my friends.
Is it hard work? Yeah. It's nice. Sometimes nice when it's all quiet about 9 o'clock at night and you're like, whew.
Yeah. I'm surprised my lot are being quiet, to be honest, because of what time it is. But, you know, I said to them I would cook them hot dogs after I finished.
Do you sing the hot dog song in your house?
We do not.
Do you not? We sing the hot dog, diggity dog.
Oh, yes. Yes, they do sing that song. In fact, my 15-year-old sings that song.
Good. I like music in the house.
My 9-year-old is constantly singing. When he's tapping away at his computer, if he's doing some drawing, if he's building a den, he sings all the time. And he doesn't realise he's doing it. He just, everything is singing.
Because everything's fun, because the children, everything's just joyful and happy and nice. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, the difference is just outstanding, I must say. I'm really glad he didn't go to school.
Yeah, let's keep him at home.
Keep him at home forever. Thank you very much, Claire, for sharing your thoughts on early years. For those of you listening, if you have any thoughts, any questions, any queries, do please comment either on the podcast itself, or you can comment on the post that you have found this podcast episode on in the Facebook group. If you are not sure where to find us, we are on Facebook, Home Ed for All, HEFA. We are on Twitter, we are on Instagram, we are on the podcasts, we have our own website. I think that might be it. We're around, we're all over the place. So you should be able to find us, and we are your heart of home ed. We are everything home ed that you need to be able to provide the education that your children deserve. So until next week, we will see you all soon, and take care.